Hare Krishna. Everything is hard. For those of you who don't have bad backs or bad something else's, I'm going to be singing now, but as a matter of Vaishnava etiquette or any etiquette, to sit below the speaker is in order. And you also won't learn anything if you sit above the speaker, according to the Upanishads. The knowledge flows down, doesn't go up. In modern auditoriums, they put the speaker at the bottom and then people will sit above, which is... Anyway, that's for mundane knowledge, but you can't learn anything spiritual by sitting above the speaker. according to the schedule given here, I'm supposed to be speaking now on inspirational brahmacharis from...
You have to adjust the sound.
Hare Krishna. Okay. I'm supposed to be speaking on inspirational brahmacharis from Shastra and history, and tomorrow on issues facing brahmacharis today, something like that.
Realities of modern day brahmacharis?
Yeah, something like that. Realities of
brahmachari life today.
Brahmachari life today. Sweet and simple. Okay. So I'm going to do the realities of brahmacharya life. I'm going to talk about that today, and probably tomorrow also, because I thought that I probably wouldn't finish that in one session. So, questions? If you have questions, please write them down. And at the end of, when I finish my formal presentation tomorrow, then I'll take questions. Yes, please. We already have a question. Write it down.
Maharaj, I read that you were going to speak on inspirational brahmacharis from Shastra and history, and I became really inspired to hear that talk.
That's why you came. You flew all the way from wherever you were just to hear about this. Well, next year.
Could you try to finish today?
Maybe I could do it on Sunday morning. They've got some pretty important stuff to talk about. Actually, there's all kinds of things. I already made some titles for next year's, if we're all around. Mm-hmm. There are many things that can be spoken about. So, thank you for the encouragement, but I'll get on with this. First thing, very happy to be here. Usually that's what everyone says, whether they mean it or not, but actually I really mean it. It's a great, it's a great privilege and honor and inspirational to see that there's so many brahmacharis here. Last year we had the first brahmachari convention, which was pretty thinly attended in San Diego in America, and for various reasons it was pretty thinly attended. Dhanavir Maharaj said to myself and Chandramouli Swami, who were the other two sannyasis in attendance, that this is, just as it was beginning, he said, this is historic that we're having this. It's like the World Wildlife Fund, they decide to try to protect some endangered species. So, like that, it's almost extinct, but there's still hope. But it seems that in Europe the brahmachari species is doing a little better than in North America. And it's not even representative of all of Europe. There's most of what was formerly called Eastern Europe is not represented. There's devotees from Czech Otherwise, do we have any? Anyway, it's mostly from
Poland.
From Poland also, yeah. But who's
no
there?
No one from Croatia is here. No,
Baltics also is not.
They have a few Brahmacharis in the Baltics also. Yeah, there's a few here and there, everywhere.
Red fighters.
There's about 120 active Brahmacharis who were unable to be with us today in Europe.
From what was formerly called Western Europe.
We're including the area of, you know, Croatia, Slovenia.
Croatia, Slovenia.
Yeah, not including Russia.
Yeah, Russia, there's lots of Brahmacharis.
Everything up to Russia, put it like that. There's at least 200.
Russia, Ukraine also.
Not including Russia.
Yeah, Ukraine's more or less part of culturally, more like Russia. So, congratulations on your commitment to be Brahmacharis. It's a glorious commitment. Even more so than in the days when, just like I was saying, 34 years ago I remember receiving some significant instruction from Jnananda Das Brahmachari in this room, and I received many significant instructions, but I remember it, which means it made an impression on me. So at that time there were lots of Brahmacharis based out of the manor, not so many staying here, but going out in Sankirtan bands, and many in Berry Place, and it was normal to be Brahmacharis. Our movement mostly consisted of Brahmacharis and Brahmacharinis, or Brahmacharinis as they were called. But nowadays there are not so many, and in those days to join the movement or to take part in Krishna consciousness in the West meant to join the temple in almost all cases. There were hardly any married devotees living outside. But nowadays, of course, there are, and we find there are many young, unmarried men who take to Krishna consciousness and they don't join the temple, and for reasons, whatever, of their own, it's not something that's much encouraged in general in the movement, and there is the alternative. You don't have to do it. It's not the normal thing to do, but you've all decided to do it, so it's something that you've decided to do after deliberation, seen the alternatives, and taken the deliberate decision to take up this life of dedication. So I am very happy to be here, because it is a special group. All devotees are special, but those who have decided to give their life for serving Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan mission, they certainly should be recognized as very special souls. And even if such devotees don't remain as Brahmacharis throughout this life, still for any period to give one's full energy, dedication, determination, to give up one's sense of independence, one's own earning power, one's own apartment and friends and dogs and cats and all this kind of thing, and just to give one's life for the service of Guru and Krishna, even if it's for a temporary period, it's certainly very great and a very glorious decision. I congratulate them on that, and I'm very happy to be in your association. So, as you've no doubt heard, not all Brahmacharis remain Brahmacharis throughout their lives. It's often stated as a discouragement to people to join the Brahmachari ashram. So it may be that not all of you remain unmarried throughout your life. Of course, some of all the Brahmacharis here, as Prabhupada sometimes said of his brahmacharya disciples, you're not brahmacharyas, you're bachelor daddies. Because you've already been through the perverted reflection of the grihastha ashram and come out the other side. Cell phones off, please. And you've already seen that sign. But for those of you who are younger, you may go to that. But still, the time that you spend in this ashram is a valuable experience that you, those who never have it, they may take to Krishna consciousness, they may be grihasthas, serious, good devotees. We're not saying that brahmacharis are intrinsically better than grihasthas, that's a mistake to say that. But at the same time, they certainly have an opportunity for becoming immersed in Krishna consciousness in a way that grihasthas just don't have. Grihasthas, their energy, their focus is on family maintenance, social affairs, looking after the children. It's a lot of energy, right? You've been married. It takes practically all your energy. So the experience of brahmacharya life is one in which all the focus, all the energy, is simply on serving Guru and Krishna 24 hours a day. And it's a whole different consciousness to that of trying to squeeze in some Krishna consciousness here and there. And the training and the association and the atmosphere, it's all very valuable. It may be that not everyone remains a brahmachari, but I recommend it as a general principle. For some people it may not be recommendable. There was a case of one of Prabhupada's disciples, brahmachari, who asked Prabhupada if he could take sannyas. Prabhupada told him, no, go and get married. So it may be advisable for some. They're not fit for lifetime brahmachari. Fit in the sense that they're not strong enough for the brihadvrata, that great vow of lifetime. Asakta anavishvanga putra dara griha ishu, of being not attached to children, wife, home, family, and the rest. They're not ready for that. But as a general principle, if one can avoid it, it's definitely better for one's spiritual advancement. As a general principle, if one can avoid getting entangled in activities which are extraneous to Krishna consciousness, namely having a wife and a child and children and a home, and even if the wife and children are Krishna conscious, still one, so much energy is spent in maintaining that situation, which could be channeled into the broader family, the Vasundhaiva Kutumbakam, seeing the whole world as one's family, and being active in spreading Krishna consciousness to more people. So for one's own spiritual advancement, it's better not to get it. And as I say, even if your wife and children are good devotees, and you're a good devotee in the Grihastha ashram, it takes a lot of energy. But generally we see that devotees that who have been brahmacharis, and then they get married, their level of involvement in Krishna consciousness and their consciousness goes down, sometimes pretty drastically. Because the very, especially the whole nature of modern life is that it fully sucks one in to a very materialistic, demoniac. The demoniac civilization is grossly materialistic, and it's very difficult for grihasthas who have to interact with that to remain fully Krishna conscious, and often they fall down into stupid things like watching TV and for convenience, they eating kami food, and the conscience just goes down, we see, in many places. So, despite the struggle that maybe that will be there, it's not easy to control the mind and senses. No one's saying it's easy, especially in the modern age. But those who remain on this path, they will they can make good spiritual progress. Anyway, struggle has to be there. If we don't make the struggle to control the mind and the senses, then we have to struggle. Still, the mind and the senses is there, and we have, it's not a solution. So we think that, well, by indulgence we'll solve the problem. It doesn't solve the problem. It just gives an outlet whereby a license for sense gratification. It doesn't solve the problem of the uncontrolled mind and senses. But instead of struggling at a higher level of Krishna consciousness, then we have to struggle to maintain a family and struggle to maintain any level of Krishna consciousness. So brahmacharya life gives us the opportunity to live in the association of serious, committed devotees, gives us opportunity for serving advanced devotees, taking their association, and performing frontline service to the Sankirtan mission, getting lots of mercy. So, recommend it. Of course, there is preaching. Don't remain a brahmachari. We find that this kind of preaching goes on by grihastha. Well, apart from family members who would like to see us, they may not be devotees. They'd like us to remain in the materialistic way of life, but even among devotees, many grihasthas, when they see a young man who's interested in joining the temple as a brahmachari, or even one who's already joined, they preach to them, don't be a brahmachari, be a grihastha, be realistic. Fortunately, here in the manor where I fell in the door one day and somewhere or other I managed to stay, my town president was a grihastha, and I wasn't interested in marriage and all that kind of thing, which is, I guess, why I fell in the door here. But I saw there are many grihasthas here, so I asked him, who's a grihastha? So you're allowed to get married? He said, don't. He said, it's not worth the trouble. I thought, well, he's a grihastha, he's seen his body, he should know what he's talking about, and that was the end of it for me. So I got some good advice, that's very good. But many grihasthas, they will say, look, just be realistic. There's no use trying to be a brahmachari, and it's be responsible, be a grihastha, and all this kind of thing. They may think that they're preaching the right thing, they're doing you a good service, just like people who are not devotees. That also, that when I was, after a few days in the manor, I was shipped off to central London, and there I was out with the Sankirtan party, and one of the first people I met was someone who was asked me, how long have you been doing this? And I said, well, about 7 or 8 days. And he said, well, you know, you won't last. Why don't you be realistic and just give it up now? So he might have thought he was doing a favor to me by saying that, but he wasn't. He might have, it's just like there are so many welfare workers who think they very sincerely think they're doing good for others by, just like Mother Teresa is lauded as a great saint. She's a meat eater, and no doubt she thought she was doing good for others by they may be in Vaishnavas, and she wanted to make them into meat-eating Christians, and no doubt she thought she was doing a good job for everyone, but actually she wasn't. Of course, even in ISKCON, we say this, we're likely to get, at best, rotten tomatoes thrown at us, but... they're mostly welfare workers. They think they're doing a good job. They may say they sincerely think they're saying something good, but we should know that in the name of welfare work, there's a lot of envious activities going on. So people who, they don't like to see young men dedicate their lives in the service of Krishna and give all their time and energy, and think, why are they doing that? They should be like me, working, driving a truck or something, or having a career, becoming a chartered accountant or something. And why are they spoiling their time? They should be a responsible citizen. It's not good preaching. If people join the temple, they'll think we're escapists, blah, 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 blah. It goes on and on and on. It's basically, it's another strain of the same enviousness as people who don't want you to be a devotee at all. I mean, if you're actually a devotee, you should be happy to see others fully engaged as devotees, and you should try and support and help them. So we should recognize this for what it is. It's not at all helpful. It's people who themselves are entangled in material life to a large extent. They think, well, everyone should be like that. And I guess you could say the same thing from my perspective. I think everyone should be fully engaged in Krishna's service. Well, that's what Shastra says, that's what Krishna says. So everyone should be fully engaged in Krishna's service. Well, it's theoretically possible to be so as a Grihastha, but generally the tendency is to be more entangled. So don't be misled. If you have a strong desire to dedicate your life in the service of Krishna, don't be misled by people telling you not to. They'll say, well, what about your career? Later, if you join, you'll have no career and this and that. Maybe you'll lose the opportunity to have a good career if you go out later to the material world. But then, if you, by gaining that opportunity to have a good career, you lost the opportunity to spend the interim period fully engaged in the service of Guru and Krishna, which you won't get in millions of lifetimes. So, your wonderful career. Everyone in the material world has some kind of career anyway. So they're either going up, down, or sideways, and what's the meaning of it all anyway? Why be so concerned about this career and all this kind of stuff? And it may be also that if you do go outside after time as a brahmachari, you may excel in the material world. There are many cases also. It's inconsequential. The opportunity to be fully engaged in the service of Guru and Krishna, like I say, it's from the Krishna conscious perspective, which is what we're supposed to be cultivating as devotees of Krishna, it far outweighs that of any so-called advancement in this so-called civilization. So, sometimes some grihasthas preach like that. In general, grihasthas don't much understand renunciants, and maybe vice versa. Brahmacharis may not understand all the difficulties grihasthas go through. We should be very congratulating the persons who, despite all their material burdens, they still are trying to dedicate their life to Krishna, and they put so much time and energy and come and do so much service. Brahmacharya should be very appreciative of that. But generally, grihasthas, they tend to think, well, my home is very nice, and brahmacharis, they're just, you know, in the ashram, they don't have any freedom, they don't have independence, they're like a prison. It's very interesting, actually, when my godbrother, Shama Sundarprabhu, he's an astrologer. So he said that you can't it's very difficult to tell everything from someone's chant, because in their chant you might see that someone that they're for many years they have to remain confined in a building, and they're restricted in their movements, and everything's a certain time of day, and they have to follow rules and regulations given by others, and you might think they're in prison, but they might be in an ashram also. It's similar in many ways. So grihasthas may see the brahmachari life as like a prison. You don't have independence, you can't go wherever you like, you just have one dress style, no fashions, and don't have a pet dog, and all the luxuries of grihastha life. And the brahmacharis see the grihastha life as a prison, where you're tied up by material desire. You're tied up to trying to satisfy your wife and a band of relatives, as Prabhupada wrote in one purpose. And like a gang. Many years ago in Birmingham, doing door to door book distribution in the evening. So I was in one apartment block and knocked on the door, and there was some kind of rumbling from behind the door. Then it opened, and a woman opened the door, and the strong smell of meat being cooked came. All these sensations all at once. This woman came out with this completely distressed look on her face. And in the background, the TV's blaring, the dog's barking, the kids are yelling, the father's yelling at the kids. And there's this horrible smell of meat coming out, and the woman standing there. This is what they come home to after a day at work. No, actually, I didn't think it was funny. I actually felt some compassion at that time. People are suffering so much. And even the so-called happy home, there's so much anxiety, and so much bondage, and so much illusion. So, grihasthas who think that I have a nice comfortable home, and these brahmacharis, they just lie down on something, they don't have any proper place to lie down on, and they have to get up every morning, and the brahmachari is very thankful for that opportunity to accept to have the freedom to serve Guru and Krishna and not be tied down by all these maitunagara, the shackles that accrue from entanglement in sex. So we need to preach, actually, this endangered species. How are we going to save this endangered species? Well, we can preach to young men to come and join. That kind of preaching isn't there much nowadays, it seems. It used to be that, well, all right, you're interested in Krishna consciousness, okay, come on. That is it. That was the natural conclusion. If someone's interested in Krishna consciousness and they're young and they're unmarried, then what else is there to do? If you understand what the importance of Krishna consciousness is, got some idea, then why do anything else? So just come and join. But with the advent of congregational preaching, the alternative has come up of, well, you can just pass on your life and go on doing a job, having a career, and then eventually get married, maybe. And many young men, they don't even think about it seems. No one even tells them that you could also join the temple, you know, Dhammacharya. No one even thinks to tell them. I had that experience recently in near Delhi. There were some young men coming and to the program, And afterwards, talking to them, and said, well, you're young, you're unmarried, you're chanting, why don't you also consent? And they never thought. They never, no one had even suggested to them that they could possibly join the temple. And they never thought about it because no one else seemed to do that. I mean, there were some people who were Brahmacharis, but it may have seemed to them like some, like I say, some other kind of species or something. No, nothing to do with me. And they thought, oh, really? You can join? I was surprised. That's allowed? Or so we need to preach about it also. And at least give people the idea. We are more cautious than we used to be about accepting Brahmacharis. You want to see that people are ready for that commitment, and they're not lazies or crazies. That also, not too crazy anyway. In the manor here also, I asked Mukunda, that's Aditha, I guess he was, his wife, and well, he was in something. Actually, quite a lot of sannyasis came out of this, that generation here at the manor, the very place. Jagannanda Maharaj, Mukunda Maharaj, Prabhavishnu Maharaj, Vrajendra Kumar, Vrajendra Nandan, Bhakti Vrajendra Nandan Maharaj, then Bhakti Chaitanya Swami, myself, Mahavishnu Maharaj, I didn't say Bhakti Chaitanya Maharaj.
Subhag Swami?
Subhag Maharaj is also a product of
Partha Sarathya.
Yeah. I never saw him here actually.
He joined here
also.
Very nice.
So it was quite a,
more came out of here than anywhere else in the world.
Quite likely, yeah. And then most, I don't think hardly any of them are here, are they? They're all over the world.
All over the world.
Birsingha Maharaj, what's his name? Vigna Vinashana Narasingha Maharaj. Did he join here or he joined in New York?
No, he joined here.
He joined here and then he went to New York and then he was everywhere. So maybe more than 10 sannyasis came out of
this temple.
Prabhupada, out of this temple. And quite a lot of grihasthas are still in contact from that generation also. So we come from a good pedigree. We had a good, I guess it must have been a good Brahmachari life, huh?
Good team. Well, you take the first traveling Sankirtan party in Europe, actually. The
first traveling Sankirtan party in Europe.
All four of us,
as Prabhavishnu, Brahmachari, Mahavishnu, Brahmachari, Jagannanda Brahmachari, and Rajendra Kumar, who became Bhakti Rajendra Nanda. He was my first Sankirtan leader also. So, we've all had a good time in Krishna consciousness. I don't have no regrets. Not thinking, I missed. I think all of them came through, none of them, with the exception of yourself, you had a short marriage. I think most of them came through without marrying, right? Yeah. And your grihastha life, that was, you were living in the temple and living like a brahmachari anyway.
Most of the time.
Yeah. So, we should let people know. That this is possible. Actually, we want the Brahmachari Ashram to develop more. ISKCON's gone through a lot of change. We're talking about realities of life in ISKCON today. ISKCON has gone through a lot of changes, and it has. In the beginning, we were maybe neglectful of the possibilities of cultivating devotees in the Grihastha Ashram. That's been developed to a large extent. That's very good. Please, again, don't call me out of context and an anti-grihastha or any such thing. It's also very good to see young grihasthas dedicated, young or older or whatever, having children, raising them in Krishna consciousness. So our movement is very much more catering to grihasthas now, but maybe it's gone too far the other way, and we need to see to the needs of what nowadays, at least in England, are often called monks. the brahmacharis and have more of them. I don't know about here, but at least in India, distributing that book, Brahmachari and Krishna Consciousness, that actually makes brahmacharis. It might work here also, at least among young men who are coming to the temple. Radhe Shambhavu in Pune, who's probably made or recruited or been instrumental in recruiting more brahmacharis than anyone in the present generation. Pune in India, he told me that when he sees young men are becoming little serious, and he gives them that book, and in many cases after they read that, they decide they want to join the temple. So it gives the idea of the challenge and the challenge in the sense of a relishable challenge of brahmacharya life. Now, having said that, those who are going to commit themselves to Krishna consciousness in the brahmacharya ashram, giving themselves, of course, we don't, in one sense, we don't overstress that I've given my life to Krishna. In one sense, that's true. In another sense, we should think that we should be very grateful that Krishna and his devotees have accepted us, that we shouldn't think that, you know, I've given my life, and I'm so great, and I'm so dedicated, but we should be thankful that we're being accepted into the society of devotees. We shouldn't think that I'm highly qualified. As I'd heard one devotee said to Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, I've given my whole life to you. And Prabhupada said, I already know that. Already understood. So, but those who leave behind the prospect of material enjoyment for the sake of very seriously wanting to become pure devotees of Krishna, give all their life, their time, their energy, their breath, everything for the service of Guru and Krishna, then they deserve to be in an atmosphere where that desire of theirs to be Krishna conscious, there's proper reciprocation with that. In other words, those who they're under the authority of, brahmachari life means to be under an authority, they should reciprocate with the brahmachari's desire to learn. Brahmachari means a student, so brahmachari should be taught what are the philosophy and the practice of Krishna consciousness. They deserve to have the associate, renounced association of devotees who they can look up to as ideals. You're talking about ideals, ideal role models of brahmacharis in history and shastra, but we need them right now in our lives today also. Who aren't going to encourage them to either directly or subtly to get married, and who don't see them as just some free floor cleaner, or just someone who you work them to the bone, and then they whatever little sadhana they can get together, that's up to them. But brahmacharis deserve to be under the shelter of devotees themselves, with their leaders should be themselves role models who they can look up to in terms of their sadhana and their renunciation and their commitment to be fully Krishna conscious. If you, of course, all of you have joined the temple, I suppose, most of you, you're in some temple or preaching center. But for those who want to join, this is a note. What does it say? Oh, this is for the end. For later? Can you give me questions at the end? At the end of, please keep this for the end of the session. So yeah, it's wise to look around and see where, and join in a center where you can get the training and the guidance that you require. Because many centers actually of our society nowadays, they don't have brahmacharis, and they're not suitable for brahmacharis. I heard that in America, many centers, if anyone comes and wants to join a young man a brahmachari, they used to send them to Dhanavir Maharaj because he had facility to look after them. And as far as the temples are concerned, they couldn't handle an untrained person. It's a headache for them, and they didn't have any facility to train anyone, or nor any idea how to train them.
And he doesn't have anything now.
He doesn't have there anything now. They can go to San Diego, I guess, or New York. San Diego's training is there, right?
Somebody came up to Phoenix, and I was talking to Red Cross, and I encouraged him to go to San Diego.
He said they went to San Diego. Yeah. Well, there is a propaganda that, well, you can't make brahmacharis nowadays. I don't believe it at all. Definitely can. Maybe there's the devotees are feeling discouraged that, well, they become brahmachari and you train them and then they go away to Maya, or they become a grihastha. But well, that's our it's part of our sacrifice, isn't it? We train people to give them a chance, and that whatever they advancement they make, that's for their eternal benefit. And they become a grihastha devotee, that's also very good. And if they stay as a brahmachari, that's very good. So, but that effort has to be there. If we think that, well, we're preaching and people don't stay, so why bother to preach? Then everything's finished. The whole preaching movement is finished. We have to have that patience to go on, despite people coming and going. We should not become disappointed. For those who are going to join, they should look and see. And it's not that you're obliged, like in some places they say, well, you're from this area, you've been coming to this temple, and we preach to you, so you have to join here. And then you become like a bonded slave in that center where you scrub the pots with no one trying to help cultivate your spiritual life until your mind, which doesn't have much spiritual food, gets the better of you, and you go away and you say, well, he wasn't sincere. So better to get some. It's important to get good association. And You may even have to go a long way to get the kind of atmosphere. Like in America, you might have to go from, Boston to San Diego, all the way across the country to get that. But it's required. Look before you leap. Other points. Yeah, I was saying that you want to find the right atmosphere. Brahmachari life seems to work very well in among devotees who we might call traditionalists or conservatives, as you presumably have noticed, if you miss your blind, deaf and dumb. There is in our movement a distinct division between devotees who might be called conservative or traditionalists, or sometimes less charitably called fundamentalists or fanatics, and those who are called liberal, pragmatic, realistic, or less kindly compromised. So a lot of our movement today is devotees. They're very much concerned with, or very much influenced by mundane academic ways of thought, and they think it's very important that devotees get mundane educational degrees, and mundane feminism, egalitarianism, which is very much part of the way of the modern way of thinking.
Egalitarianism?
Yeah, I just explained that. Egalitarianism means the idea that everyone is equal. There are no, everyone should be equal in all respects. And everyone's all the same, whether you practice seriously or not seriously, it's all the same. And whether you've been in the movement 3 days or 30 years, it's all the same. And you don't have to bow down or offer respects to anyone. And gurus and new devotees, they're all the same. And everything's all the same. Well, that's the modern way of thinking, that everyone's all the same. Everyone's entitled to a vote, and everyone's entitled to insult everyone else, and that's the way we're all brought up in the modern way of thinking. And it's easier to go along with the modern way of thinking than to accept the line that Srila Prabhupada took, which is to speak out against practically everything that modern society stood for, although he did say some good things about it, but not much. Pretty much Srila Prabhupada stood against everything that modern society stood for, because modern society stands against Krishna consciousness. It's totally materialistic. The educational system is atheistic. They tolerate religion to some extent, and even the religion, it's all materialistic. Even the so-called religion, whatever little you can find in this godless country, is also quite materialistic there. It's a totally misguided civilization, but it's easier to go with the flow than against it. And it's considered more mature and realistic and sophisticated, and it's good preaching if everyone likes us. And of course, if we better to be normal, right? You've heard that one, right? It's better to be normal, and that's why you're being a brahmachari. You're What is this, being a brahmachari? You should just be normal and wear coats and pants and have a job and watch TV and eat kami food. Be a vegetarian normal person, and sometimes, if you remember, chant Hare Krishna. But Srila Prabhupada was, of course, maybe that's an exaggeration, but it's exaggeration shows the, brings out the point. But Srila Prabhupada was actually very aggressive in just the very fact that of dressing the way brahmacharis do. Nowadays it's not so much, but definitely in the 1960s and 1970s it was a declaration that we're not part of your society. We are different. We don't want to be part of your society. So there are many strange ideas have entered our movement, and brahmachari life, as we see, it only flourishes among devotees who would be called traditionalist conservatives or incorrectly fanatics. Fanatic, Srila Prabhupada defines that term as someone who is a religion without knowledge, is sentimentalism or sometimes fanaticism. So according to this definition which Srila Prabhupada gives, one who is very seriously practicing Krishna is not a fanatic, maybe a fundamentalist. Of course, that's also used as a pejorative term. Pejorative, for those of you who don't know what it means like a bad word. But really, we are interested in the fundamentals. We're interested in understanding who we are, what is the goal of life, and how to attain it, even if that means going against everything that modern society has to offer. So, we do find that brahmachari life flourishes where there is that strong, it means strong commitment. And it's very difficult to have strong commitment if you're in this kind of wishy-washy consciousness that everything's all the same, and whether you're committed or not committed, it's all the same. And how can you be a brahmachari? Brahmachari is supposed to be a servant of his guru. If you think, well, with guru and me, it's all the same. And just this, as I said, egalitarian kind of outlook. So, New Ageism, New Age ideas. So many strange things, which I guess you could somehow link them with Krishna consciousness, but on the other hand, committed brahmachari who's really committed to serving Guru and Krishna doesn't have time or much interest to get into Reiki or astrology or hypnotic regression or gemstones or how many things are, I don't even know them all. Whatever there is, there's always new things coming up. So really, brahmachari lesson is very focused. We have to read Srila Prabhupada's books, understand the mission, and serve it. Tivrena bhakti yogena. Yeah, those who call you a fanatic say, well, that's what Shastra says. Tivrena. Bhakti is supposed to be executed in a concentrated, focused manner. That we find Krishna recommends again and again in Bhagavad Gita. Ananya chintayantam, ananya cheta satatam. All ananya, without anything else, only Krishna. So it may appear to others to be fanaticism. Of course, devotees are brahmacharis. They should not come over as, well, they might come over as fanatical, but it's not that we hate anyone or condemn anyone. Hopefully we should be able to interact with various kinds of people. It's not that we should just go around condemning everyone all the time. Not all the time. Some. That has to be there also. We have to see what is the difference between Krishna conscious and non-Krishna conscious. Krishna conscious is the path of truth, of reality, and everything else is what is that? Krishna Surya Sama Maya Hoyandaka. There's Krishna consciousness, Jahan Krishna Tahan Nahi Maya Radhika. And there's non-Krishna consciousness. One is the path of light and the other is the path of darkness. So to say that they're all the same and there's not that much difference, and it's all Mayavad actually, all this egalitarianism and feminism, it's all different, Ritvikism, it's all different strains of Mayavad. So, psychology.
Yes, psychology, that's another one.
Mundane psychology. Beware. Beware of mundane psychology. Very dangerous. I won't get into that now. Don't be victimized. I've written in my notes here. Don't be victimized. Stick to the straight and narrow. There are many things can be used in Krishna's service, but the things that we're sure about are chanting Hare Krishna, reading Srila Prabhupada's books, and following the instructions therein. And other things theoretically can be used in Krishna's service. The other day, 2 nights ago, I was asked, well, can't we use Dale Carnegie's teachings in Krishna's service? And he has lots of good things in there. He wrote this book called How to Win Friends and Influence People, a famous book. I heard this guy ended his life by committing suicide. Does anyone know about that? Yeah. Well, you can look it up on the internet. Open your laptop and look it up. Anyone? You mean no one's got a laptop? What kind of brahmachari?
Nobody must have one.
All right. Okay. Anyway, it would be interesting to get that. Anyway, in brief, I won't get into the fact. The thing is that we have all directions on how to live in this world and interact with people in a manner that is conducive for Krishna consciousness. We have all directions in Shastra, in the lives of our acharyas. Everything is there. Although people like Dale Carnegie and Stephen Covey may have come up with some good principles, which through their observations, at the same time their consciousness, because they are non-devotees, is necessarily, either directly or subtly, it's imbued with the exploitive spirit. And that will influence us if we read their books. I mean, we find devotees, they quote Stephen Covey more than Bhagavad Gita, which is not healthy. He may have said some good things, but he's not our acharya. So be careful of all this. Don't be, and it's necessarily these people, their aim of life is in line with that of modern materialistic society. So we'll be influenced by that if we get into reading these books. Prabhupada said about Time magazine that if you read that, you'll think the material world is real. And I remember that myself. Our landlord in Bangladesh were in a kind of unusual preaching situation, underground preaching. So our landlord, we were obliged to have some kind of social contact with him. It was horrible, but we had to do it for the sake of getting a foothold in that country. So he gave me Time magazine every week, and then I was supposed to discuss with him. And I found after a few weeks of this, I found myself becoming, even though I'd never been to America, feeling like a patriotic American. And this is ridiculous. It's not directly there in Time magazine, but it's subtly there. Just like in Prabhupada's books, it's not directly stated in every drop of ink, but it's definitely there. Surrender to Krishna. Whereas in Time magazine, it's not there directly, but it's definitely there in every drop of ink. Stars and Stripes, what's that? American National Anthem? Star Spangled Banner. Or it's America. God Save America. No, what is that?
God Bless
America. God Bless America. Why America? Because we're American. If you associate with materialistic, with anyone, you imbue their consciousness. So better live in the Vaikuntha. Associate with Prabhupada and his books and his devotees. So yeah, in a sense it may seem fanatical to persons who are of the consciousness that, well, we should have a very broad outlook. Well, no. We should have an outlook focused on Krishna. Broad in the sense that we see Krishna and we see all his living beings. And we see how they're related to Krishna. So that is Udara Dhi. It mentioned in the verse. Tibrena. The two words may seem to be contradictory. In the same verse that the words come up. Udara Dhi. One who is of broad intelligence. He engages in tibrena bhakti yogena by the process of focused, concentrated bhakti yoga. Yajeta purusham param, he worships the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the two terms are not contradictory. One who is focused on Krishna can actually see everything in perspective and see everyone else in perspective in their relationship with Krishna. But people who talk about being broad-minded, they're actually very narrow-minded, because while they talk about compassion and love and all this kind of thing, actually they're very narrow-minded, because while saying these things, they're actually concerned with their own self-interest and their own sense gratification. So beware of, that's also New Age, talk about compassion and love in a very broad, vague manner. We should know that talk of compassion and love and kindness and all these things, unless it's directly connected to Krishna, it's just bogus. It's just pretending to be kind and compassionate and all, but actually it's all centered on sense gratification, because unless it's centered on Krishna, then the basis is envy of Krishna, in which there is no any compassion, love, kindness, etc. It all eventually comes down to sense gratification. So be careful of this, because we do hear a lot of this drivel even within our ISKCON society, unfortunately. People quote words that I've heard this so many times, compassion. But it's just in a very general, vague way. Don't be victimized. Stick to the straight and narrow, have good sadhana, study Srila Prabhupada's books, hear from Srila Prabhupada, keep good association. Here's another thing, I don't recommend brahmacharis to serve under a woman temple president. Brahmachari is traditionally executed as a part of Varnashram Dharma, Brahmachari ashram, in which there's a clear demarcation of gender roles. And Brahmacharis, they may be under a woman, but in the sense that Brahmachari Gurukule Vasam Danta Guru Hitam, they live in the Gurukul, in which the Guru is generally a Grihastha, actually, the kind of Guru that Krishna describes in his description of Brahmachari life. The traditional Brahmachari would be a Grihastha living in the forest with his wife, and so the one of the seven mothers, Guru Patni, the wife of the Guru. So the young boys, Brahmacharis, they would be there. But Brahmacharya is part of Varnashram Dharma. One has to act within that as well as one can in the modern age. But a woman who herself is not following her own dharma, Stri Dharma, it's very difficult how she's going to impart that to the role, the ashram role, to a brahmachari. And brahmachari, he may serve a woman as the wife of the guru, but not that he's independently under her guidance. It's not expected that a woman can guide a brahmachari very well. Of course, spiritually all are equal, but there is a difference. We should know that there is a difference. And therefore there is the Varnashram system, in which men and women, very broadly, men and women have different roles, and then Brahmacharis, Grihasthas, Vanaprasthas and Sannyasis have different roles, Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, Shudras have different roles. That demarcation isn't there in the modern age. Srila Prabhupada wanted to introduce that. We haven't made much progress in doing so, but having women as temple presidents, as I see it, I have to enter that rejoinder there, that it's a step backwards, another step forward. Brahmachari should be under sannyasis and brahmacharis, ideally. Under grihasthas, if they're strong and supportive of the brahmachari ashram, can be also. Another nonsense in the modern age, brothers and sisters, kind of cultivating brothers and sisters feeling. No, but men and women should be, they shouldn't come very close. They should, that feeling maybe, I remember that in the very place, there was maybe some feeling like that, the brahmacharis and the brahmacharinis, they were living cramped up in one building, but at the same time there was no unnecessary interaction, was there? In Berry Place. And there was a mutual respect between the Brahmacharis and Brahmacharinis, and it was there, but there was no talking whatsoever or dealing whatsoever any more than needed. And I remember actually one sannyasi came into Berry Place once and gave a really heavy lecture against women, said that. And then at the end, one of the Brahmacharis, this is a Berry Place, which is the forerunner of the Silver Street Temple. And one of the brahmacharis at the end of the class said, well, so shouldn't we see all women as our mothers? Because that was the mood, actually, in the very place temple. And he said, no, you should see those old tailors coming to suck your blood. But the brahmacharis, even though in those days there was tremendous respect for sannyasis, much more than nowadays. But no, I didn't hear anyone speaking against it, but no one was very satisfied with that, actually. And, that sannyasi, he didn't remain in the sannyasi ashram very long after that. So, remember that?
I don't remember that.
Maybe you were there. Maybe you were there. Pushed. So, no free...
Huh? I think I must have been here at that time.
Quite likely, yeah. No free mixing, no loose mixing, otherwise you're finished. You won't remain as a brahmachari, because by repeatedly mixing or seeing the same woman, it's the fire and butter principle works. It's always there. It's difficult to be self-present with brahmacharis. everything is mixed up in the modern age, and people think it's just normal that men and women mix up, and from childhood it's like that, and then they start having sex at the age of, even before puberty, which is really weird. I mean, really weird. I mean, after puberty it's kind of understandable to some extent, even if they're not married, but even pre-puberty. So, and then they just mix up, it's just considered normal in modern society. And it does seem strange to people who don't understand the principles of non-mixing of the sexes, that there is segregation of the sexes. And apparently, so we've been told, that like when school groups come to temples of ISKCON, and they may say that, well, we like everything, but why are the men and women separate and like this? And they seem to see it as a fault. But, and so some of our devotees think, well, we should mix up the men and the women, and like this. But that isn't the answer. The answer is to preach to the people why there is separation, not to move the men and the women together because they don't understand it. We shouldn't compromise our principles because people don't understand it or they don't like it. Rather, we should preach to them that this is the way it is. This is, we have a reason for doing it, this is the reason. Maybe difficult for you to understand, but we can't change our principles because the whole world is in Maya. We don't have to get in Maya just to satisfy the rest of the world. And it wasn't long ago, I mean, even one generation ago, when this, when I used to go to church, and the men were on one side and the women were on the other. I don't know what it's like now, even if there's anyone going to the church. But that's the way it was. And actually the women, the older ones, would cover their head in the church. So it's not just some Hindu idea that women cover their head. But even now in some backward countries, like rural parts of Russia, and in Europe still, probably in Romania and some backward parts of the communist bloc, you'll probably find elder women who cover their heads because they consider that chaste. Right, in Czech, in the country still?
Old grandmothers.
Old grandmothers, yeah, that's what I'm saying. And now they become more advanced. Why be chaste? That's women all over the world, the idea wasn't, it's not just something that Prabhupada dreamed up, but all over the world, women were, it was understood to be a necessary quality of women, and it was there was a concept of women being respectable, and that's completely gone. So why should we adjust ourselves to this rakshasa society? Rather, we should preach that it's a horrible society, which is it's all the ideas, a whole way of thinking is just to make everyone as sinful as possible and send them to hell. It's completely horrible. And there's free mixing of the sexes, and there's nothing wrong with illicit sex. They say to, they shouldn't be married. This idea they have in India that we get married at the age of 8 or 10 or something. It's horrible, you see. But then the girls are having babies at the age of 13. So better let them be married and have a fixed husband rather than, you know, they have one child by one. Someone, they're not exactly sure who it was, but someone. And then, you know, another one by someone else, and you know, and they have 5 kids or something, or 5 pregnancies, and 2 of them are terminated. And they get money from the government to run on their zoo with the taxpayers' money. It's mad. I mean, anyone who can't see that this whole society is completely mad is definitely mad. So. Again, this is fanaticism, fundamentalism, but we should be very careful about trying to become normal, because in a madhouse, what do you want to be normal for? It's really a virtue to be different, and to stand out and say, look, you know, the whole society is crazy. And you can preach to people like this, there's no harm to preach like this, saying, hey, look, the whole world is crazy, we should be doing something better. And there are many people who will appreciate that. What's all this become normal stuff. I mean, that's why we joined this movement, isn't it? Because we saw this whole, it's a whole madhouse, and we don't want to be like that. So then, after joining again, we want to be like that? It doesn't make any sense to me. So, no free mixing, or you're finished. Brahmachari is meant for education. Traditionally, Brahmachari life is begun at the age of 5 or thereabouts. It's meant for education. And as Srila Prabhupada said, the main point of education is not as is conceived in the exploitive, Shudra-dominated age to get a degree so you can go and wag your tail at different doors and try and get a job. But education is for developing character. It's all what Prabhupada said. I'm not just making up some jokes here. It's all standard Prabhupada stuff, isn't it? I actually find it unfortunate that many people laugh nowadays when we say the standard things that Prabhupada said. And we use words like nonsense, fool, rascal, everyone starts laughing like it's a joke. But these are standard words in Srila Prabhupada's vocabulary to describe the reality of the situation we're in. And if we don't understand that everything around us is all nonsense, foolishness, and rascaldom, then we're in a lot of trouble. Really. So, Brahmachari life is meant for developing character. But as Lord Kapila Dev says, one's good character is destroyed by intimate association with women. All good qualities, but by one who becomes a dancing dog in the hands of a woman. So, warnings are there. So education, in the beginning, the brahmacharis, they don't have much dealings with women. The guru's wife may be there if the guru's householder. And they'll go and beg in the village, because when it said, when Srila Prabhupada was asked about Vedic culture, when he was once asked if Vedic culture is in the village, Prabhupada said, no, it's in the forest. The forest ashram, that would be in the forest, not far from the village, not deep in the forest, because the brahmacharis would come out to beg. So, not very deeply in the forest. So they would see women, they would beg in different houses and go back to the ashram. And the guru might have daughters also, and in the village there would be young girls also, but the training was to be aloof from female association. And actually, it's for us who have been raised in this modern world, it's very difficult to imagine how free from lust, greed, anger, material attachment, and the whole different culture which was there previously. And I've seen to some extent among traditional families in India, and even one or two generations ago, people who are raised in a traditional, what we might call a religious background, I mean, they didn't think of sex. It just wasn't there, it wasn't an issue. It's not like in the modern age where from the very beginning with the whole society is just full of sexual provocation from the TV and the way men and especially women, they dress and the way they interact and behave with each other. It's just the whole society is soaked with sexual provocation. But in a traditional society, it's just not there. The arrangement is there for sex, marriage, and most people go that way. But it's just not such a promoted or in the same way that it is in modern society. So many devotees even have dedicated their life, and everyone is suffering from attraction to the opposite sex. But the fever that we all have been raised in, it's very difficult to bring down the temperature. But previously, the whole society was much better, and then naturally the character, the whole society is one in which the character we couldn't imagine. Even one devotee was telling me in Sweden, like 20 years ago, he bought a house, and then when he was dealing with the lawyer told him that actually when I was young, the lawyer was an elderly man, and he said, when I was a young man, it was very simple, making a deal for a house. And you just, basically, when you shook your hand and everything was concluded, and it was very simple. But nowadays, you have to have a very complex document, and you have to examine it. Because people didn't used to cheat each other. And the same devotee told me that even until fairly recently in Germany, the mentality of cheating in business, it wasn't there. But now you have to be very careful. The character is going down all the time. I heard that still in some places in America, in some small towns, you can do a deal with someone, maybe to sell a car or something. You shake your hands and that's it. It's done. Before I joined the movement, I was wandering aimlessly around Ireland, and you go in some small village, and the house door is open, and you knock on the door. There's no one in. People are out, the door's open. Recently in a village area in India, in a hill area, I said this confidently, that you know, one generation ago you could leave the doors open, and said, well, still we do. I said, oh, so TV hasn't come yet. No, TV hasn't come. TV makes such a difference. At the time in India when the TV was just, it didn't used to be everywhere, it just used to be in a few areas. It was just coming in different areas. So you'd go in one place and people would be so nice, and then you go to another place just like 10 kilometers down the road and people are all nasty. There's a distinct difference between the place where the TV had come and where it hadn't come. Interesting, huh? So this idea that be normal, watch TV, no. Sorry, I'm not going in a very straight line here.
There is a time schedule.
Oh, I thought it was to 6:30.
No, 6:00.
Oh, okay, sorry. Okay, I'm finished. All right.
Is it
6:30?
No, it's
6:07.
6:07.
Till 6:00, 4:30 to 6.
4:30.
Okay, sorry for that. I'm finished there. And we'll continue.
You will be continuing tomorrow morning.
Yeah.
Questions,
yeah, tomorrow, because often in this kind of presentation, the questions, they cover topics which are supposed to be spoken on in a later session. I'm always trying to sell my books, so, including the Brahmacharya and Krishna Consciousness, recommended, especially for Brahmacharyas.
How much is it, Maharaj?
More than a Brahmachari should be able to afford. Brahmachari is supposed to give all their money to their guru, right? I don't know. What should we sell it for? Who's from England? Who knows what a reasonable price would be? I guess if the... I don't know. You're looking.
They told me free when I went over there earlier on.
That's for you.
The salesman is sponsoring it, I think. Not for me, that's for you. Anyway, before everyone goes, just hold on, you can find that out tomorrow. There's a couple of little announcements here. Stevie's program, of course, will be Dhanavir Goswami, will be leading Kirtan, and he and Prahlad Nanda Maharaj will be having a, I'm not sure how they're going to work it out, but they're having a joint evening program. And then tomorrow, tomorrow the schedule is the same. 10 o'clock, the seminar starts with Vijay Prabhu. And then on books, Brahmacharya Ashram, book distribution, the Brahmacharya Ashram. And then His Holiness Bhakti Prakash Maharaj will continue 12 o'clock. I got it wrong, just the first day was different. The second seminar is 12 o'clock. You have a 30-minute break. So it's 12 o'clock tomorrow, please make a note. And then at 1:30, we'll have lunch. A very special lunch. Yeah. And then we want to push the program forward a little bit. Now we know this is tight and we're a little tight with tiredness and so on. It's the last day tomorrow. So we want to try to start.